Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to Hour 2 of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis, and the lovely Ben. Good evening, Ben. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening, Dave.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Nah, muy bien.
Las cucarachas entran tu cabeza, pero no pueden salir.
Yeah, whatever she said.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, she's so multilingual.
That was like...
That's like the only phrase I know.
You were like speaking Polish or something?
Yeah. Now, Ben, just so people know, we didn't fire Ben. We didn't cast her off like a demon. We simply...
We didn't?
No. Ben got a real life and a real job, and she's tied up on most Sunday nights, but tonight it just so happened she had a free night, so she's coming in to visit and hang out with us, so thank you for joining us again, Ben. She's keeping tabs on the chat room, and again, for those of you that may not be familiar, we have a live chat room. We invite you to join us in there. Just go to darknessradio.com, click on the Listen tab, and there is a link that takes you directly to the live chat room. You can join in there with us each week, talk with other like-minded individuals. You will talk about all forms of the paranormal, cookies, and other stupid topics, so yeah. Please feel free to join us.
Yes. And also the chat room is open 24/7, so you can come in anytime that you want to, whether it's during the show, after the show, whatever.
Right, but right during the show, we is I think
during the show we do have
show up. Yep.
A lot of people in there, and it's pretty much the greatest night that we have is during the show.
Excellent. Well, it's nice to have a place for everybody to get together. I want to make a couple quick mentions. Listen, most of the Darkness Radio retreats are sold out right now. We have the Queen Mary still open for December. That's going to go fast. And folks, here's an announcement. This may be our last event at the Queen Mary. Yeah, that's right. So this looks like it could be the last Darkness Radio event taking place at the Queen Mary. They're making a lot of changes. A lot of things are going up in the air over there. So this looks like it could be our last shot at doing a big event there. So I hope that you will join us. But for those of you still looking for an awesome event to attend and something that's affordable, I have got the event for you. Coming up in May is Ghost Stock, and it takes place in the beautiful Savannah, Georgia, hosted by Haunting Evidences, Mr. Patrick Burns. This year on the roster, he's got some fantastic speakers, including his co-host from Haunting Evidence, John Oliver. The psychic will be on hand. There's going to be a lot of great things going on. I know I'll be down there doing a talk as well. Timmy, I think we're going to still try to figure out a way to drag your sorry ass down to Savannah so you can see this. It's going to be a lot of fun stuff. Why, who's getting married this time at the Ghost Stock?
Dannybrook, buddy boy.
Oh, Danny that's Brooke. Right. Dannybrook. I forgot. You're going to be out busy with Chad Kalick's group.
And
you'll
HH
be hosting
group.
The Dannybrook setup. So, yeah, I apologize. I guess Tim won't be there. Unless we can figure out a way to split you and clone you.
That's a whole lot of splitting and cloning, my friend.
that's next week's topic. But go to Ghost Stock. We have a special deal that we're doing from Darkness Radio. We are offering up two special deals for Ghost Stock. If you attend Ghost Stock, your name will be entered into a drawing. And check this out, Ben. If you attend Ghost Stock, your name will be in the drawing. If you're drawn, you get two free passes to the Stanley sold-out event in November 2008. And you get a room for free to stay in for the entire event.
That is absolutely amazing.
Right, it comes to about $1,000 savings for you if you want to join us. So just by attending
Ghost Stock. So do I qualify for that?
Are you going to be at Ghost Stock?
Are you bringing me?
No, but thank you for playing along. But if you come down to GhostDoc, you will be able to be a part of that. We also have this going on. If you sign up for GhostDoc right now, you can go to GhostDoc.com. Contact Patrick Burns there. Send him an email. Tell him that you want the Darkness Radio rebate or the Darkness Radio
discount.
That's what I'm looking for. We have a special deal where Darkness Radio is picking up 20% of the tab if you want to sign up to go to GhostDoc. So we're going to take the money off. It's normally $150 a ticket. He's got a great deal. It's $150 for one ticket, $250 for two people, and in groups of six or more, I think it's only $650, and you can save even more with larger groups. So pool all your friends together. Come there. You'll save money on tickets. Plus, Tim and I are going to pick up 20% of the tab to help you make it even more affordable. Plus, when you're down there, Patrick breaks up the groups into small groups, very small groups of like five, six people, and you get about 15 different locations to ghost hunt. We had some phenomenal activity last year. And then there's days that everybody gets together, all of the different teams that were broken up, and they put together their best evidence and talk about it and show it, and we discuss it as a group. I highly recommend you check it out. Again, it's GhostDoc.com. One more quick announcement. One of our newer advertisers that we have on the show is Dean Haglund from The X-Files has invented a really great item for those of you that like to use laptops. It's called the Chill Pack. And the chill pack goes right in your freezer. It's reusable. Comes out, and you put it underneath your laptop. It'll actually keep the CPU cooler, which will make your speed go a lot faster on your computers. It is specially lined so that no moisture will ever get into your computer or bother your computer, but it does keep it cool. It makes a laptop again. If you're like me and Tim, I know we're doing all these work on the airplanes in and back and through trips, and my laptop burns the hell out of my lap with the cooler I bring it with, throw it on my lap before we start up on the plane, and it's a perfect little way to keep my lap cool, keep the laptop cool, and keep it functioning well. You can get more information by going to deanhaglund.com. That's H-A-G-L-U-N-D.com, deanhaglund.com. Also, something really cool there, for those of you that attended the Queen Mary event, you get to see a live improv comedy performance by Dean Haglund, and he incorporated Jason from Ghost Hunters, Grant from Ghost Hunters, Chris Fleming from Dead Famous, and Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence all in his improv show. He brought them all up on stage. They all had to improv with him. It was hilarious. We had one of the best times at that event, so hopefully you'll join us, and you can go buy a copy of that DVD by going to deanhaglund.com. Click on the tab to pick it up. He'll be able to get it out for you. He'll even autograph the DVD for you. So order that up right now and get that taken care of. We're going to get into our second hour of our show this evening. We have got an interesting show here, Tim. You know, we like to try to look at all different aspects of the paranormal. We try to look at all different aspects of views on religion, on ghosts, demons, so on and so forth. And I was brought to the attention of our next guest, and our guest is Cloyce Orand. And has a book out called The Antichrist Version 666. And this gentleman has definitely lived an interesting life. A lot of sadness surrounding his life, a lot of negativity that has influenced him. And he has taken it and written a totally different style of book. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about this. We're going to find out about his story. And we'd like to welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town paranormal radio show, Cloyce Orand. Cloyce, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, I appreciate it. Now, your book is out and available right now. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and again, the full title is The Antichrist Version 666?
Exactly.
And people can order the book by going to which website?
Well, you can get it personally from me. You get an autographed copy, The Antichrist Version 666.com. You can also, it's available at Amazon.com and Barnes and Nobles and pretty much, you know, any bookstore.
Well, let's start off the interview here talking, Cloyce, a little bit about your life. You're a survivor. You've had near-death experiences. You've had amazing things occur in your life that most people, you know, would have just crumbled and collapsed around, and you've picked your life up and kind of rebooted. Now, start us off with some of your story. I mean, you know, your near-death experience when you were younger.
Well, I mean, it started off at the very beginning. You know, I was raised in a very abusive environment. My father was very abusive, and I found myself praying a lot, you know, to God and asking, you know, what did I do to deserve this? I mean, we're talking the age of 6, 7 years old, you know. There's a, you know, when you're getting beaten almost to death at that age, you have to hope that there's a higher power and there's a reason for, you know, what is happening. And I found, you know, at that age, you know, I had to depend a lot on survival. I had to, you know, use a lot of self-psychology. You know, my father would beat me to the point, you know, where I couldn't breathe at sometimes. And, you know, I had to ask God, you know, what's going on, you know? What did I do to deserve this? So I had to rely on myself because, you know, there's many times I prayed and prayed and prayed and nobody was answering my prayers. And, you know, the abuse continued and continued. And so the first time I ran away, I was like 7 years old. I was, you know, found myself on the streets in the cold, looking through dumpsters for food and, you know, I feel blessed with my lifestyle because there's a lot of people in the world that will help you when they see you in distress, especially, you know, at the age that, you know, 6 and 7 years old, being on the streets, people have compassion for you. So, you know, I found myself, a lot of people were giving me money and giving me food and, you know, what are you doing out here? Get your, you know, go home.
Right.
Is what they're saying, you know? But when I was at home, I felt like my life was in danger, you know. My father, and I don't know why, he wasn't a drinker. He wasn't a religious fanatic or, you know, anything like that. He just, you know, life itself has its own turmoils with the financial situations and, you know, the way that people were raised. You know, my father was brought up differently than in the environment that I was brought up in, you know. Back in the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of abuse happening. So I'm sure there's a lot of abuse stories out there. And I try not to sell my book based on, you know, abuse because I feel, you know, a lot of people say, hey, that's an amazing story. And, you know, gosh, how'd you get through it? But, you know, I think there's a lot of amazing stories out there with people as far as, you know, having to deal with different abuse and, you know, from their parents and neglect and whatnot. So, but not to get off the subject, I left my house. I was on the streets at a young age. I found myself surviving on the streets, hitchhiking a lot. I was picked up by, I would say, a crazy man.
And around what age was this?
This was at age 13. But,
okay.
You know, I had a lot of street smarts at that time. And he picked us up, and he was like, you guys want to earn some money? You know, and there was a couple girls with me. I didn't mention them in my book because my book is very controversial. You know, we talk about the Antichrist and another, you know, reality versus religion and whatnot. So I didn't want to affiliate them with that, and I don't believe that they deserve that. This is my perspective, so this,
right.
This really has nothing to do with them. So I didn't add them to the storyline, but there was two other girls that were involved in the situation. We were picked up. We were all homeless. These girls, they clung to me because I was already strong, and I knew how to get food. I knew how to find warm clothing. I knew how to get us our cigarettes, our booze. We broke into abandoned houses that were for sale. I knew how to manipulate the system for survival, and they clung to me, and we kind of hung together, and, you know, so I had a system, and, you know, they saw that, so they saw my strength. So it ended up where we were hitchhiking, we were going downtown to the Strip to have fun, and the Strip, I found, was a good place to manipulate the system because there was a lot of homeless people there. There was a lot of people out there with money and, you know, partying. And it was definitely a venue for me as far as to manipulate the system and get the things that we needed for survival. Well, we just happened to get picked up by somebody who wanted to manipulate us. And he offered us an opportunity to make some spare cash. I've always had a hard-working background as far as it's so much easier to go and sweep somebody's driveway and make $5 than it was to try to scam the money, you know.
Right.
Plus I felt it was better, you know, a better way of getting it. And he said, hey, you guys want to earn a few bucks? And we were like, heck yeah, you know. One of the girls that was with me looked at me and said, you know, I don't know about the situation. It seems, you know, kind of weird. And I agreed with her. I was like, let's get the hell out of here, you know. But another girl that was with us, she'd grown close to the guy because she was sitting in the front seat. She was like, I trust this guy. Let's go do this work and that he speaks of and, you know, get it done. And, you know, he's offering us money and... You know, what you're talking about, we don't even know, but this right here, this is our first scam of the night, so let's do it. Well, we didn't want to leave. We basically told her, no, we're leaving. We're gone. And she goes, well, I'm staying. And then we looked at each other and said, well, then we're staying because we're not going to leave you here with this freak, you know.
Right.
He took us out to an abandoned road, and, you know, we were familiar with the settings because we know the whole area that we lived in. We all lived on the streets, and so he took us to this area and got us liquor, and, you know, we were partying, we were having fun. And then it came down to the point where he shined a flashlight in our face with a gun and said, look, take off your clothes, and this is it. I mean, so at that point, I pretty much... Like I said, my brain has a weird way of dealing with turmoil. I did it with my father back in the day when he used to abuse me to the point where I created this laugh therapy, which was, to me, now that I look back on it, you know, as a 34-year-old man, I'm like, you know, a 7-year-old coming up with laugh therapy, you know, something that I hear about,
right.
You know, that psychologists know about and, you know, how the brain works and whatnot to protect the whole system from shutting down. Hey, he beat me to the point where I just ignored it, and it's mind over matter. You know, it's basically, I'm not going to allow this person to break me down to where my brain shuts down. So, you know, he would beat me to the point where I just ignored it. I took my beating, and I laughed about it afterwards. It seems a little psychotic, but, you know, it's what I had to do to survive at that point.
This man actually ended up stabbing you repeatedly and shooting you?
Well, here's the thing. He pointed the gun at us, and he told us he was raping us. And at this point, I was already intoxicated. And I believe that at that point, my brain shut down. And most of the testimony during the court trials and whatnot, it was, I don't remember. So at that point, I blacked out. And he had raped the two girls, and I was already unconscious. I woke back up, and he was, the only memory that I have is he was bobbing up and down on my private, you know, my penis, and he was looking at me. He's like, why aren't you getting off? How come you're not hard? You know, what's going on here? And I passed right back out. The next moment that I remember is I was tied up on a couch. My hands were tied up behind me. This was out on a dirt road, a dumping area where people dump refrigerators, couches, and then leave the scene and totally get away with getting rid of their, you know, their unusables and whatnot. So I woke up again, and he was like, don't say anything, don't scream. I'm tying you up. If you try to escape, I'm going to kill you. And that's when I was... like, really realized that we were in a serious situation. I had not understood everything that had happened with the other two girls. I mean, at that point, they were already raped, and one of the girls, she had two bullets in her head, and she was pretty much almost dead. The other girl, she had her throat sliced twice at that point and was raped. And when I woke up, and he told me this, and I watched him walk away. I woke up, and I quickly untied myself as soon as he was out of sight, and I went to the other girls, and they were done for. And then he came back around the corner. I seen his flashlight, you know, on the dirt road. And here he was coming again. And I remember the last words that he told me after I'd seen everything. I mean, I was only 13 years old. I'd seen this devastation that just was before my eyes, and I was just, I was just astonished, you know, just amazed, and I was very fearful at that point.
Understandably.
I jumped back on the couch and pretended like my hands were back tied up, and I was pretending like I was unconscious again. Well, it was him. He came back up to me. He wrapped a cloth around my neck and started beginning to choke me. And I've been in that situation before with my father, and I realized that this is just a time where you play stupid, act like a limp, basically act like a limp piece of prey.
Right.
And just let him do what he does so that he thinks that you're dead, so that he walks away and it's done. Well, he wrapped this cloth around my neck and began to strangle me. And even with those type of situations where you know what you're supposed to be doing, pretend like it's not happening, as a 13-year-old being choked and your air being taken away from you, I began to struggle. I sucked my chin into my chest, and I was gasping for air, so my mouth was completely wide open. Well, he went to slice my throat, and it ended up cutting me across my face. The knife stabbed into my left cheek, and it sliced my cheek completely open all the way to my right cheek, basically ear to ear, and it filleted my tongue, because my tongue was hanging out. I was being choked, and it basically filleted my tongue, you know, almost completely off. And at that point, I blacked out again. The very next scene that I saw with my eyes was basically waking up in the hospital, and my parents were crying over me. And my father and my mother were both had a lot of guilt, and they were like, you know, this is our fault, and, you know, we promised that this will never happen again. You know, we're gonna, you know, if we wouldn't have done the things, I've never heard this from my parents before. Everything was, it was always my fault. I was the black sheep of the family, and this is the first time that I'd actually heard my parents saying, you know, we might partially be responsible with this. Well, little did I know, you know, the whole situation of, you know, there's newspaper reporters and, you know, detectives and whatnot overseeing the whole situation in the room. And to me, even at the situation, it seemed like a bit of an act, you know, because I've watched him. My father, at the age of 5, was drowning me in a toilet until I was unconscious. You know, never did he ever come back and say, "Oh, I'm sorry." You know, "Oh my gosh, are you okay?" And even at this point, I was a little stunned by the situation. Then I started. I mean, even at 13, I was starting to realize how the whole game works, you know, as far as people watching it and rules, and, you know, they felt like the only reason why they were there and had the remorse that they did is because they thought they were in serious trouble.
Right. Well, you know what, Cloyce, we have to take a quick break here. We'll come back, we'll talk more with you and hear more of your story right after this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Mi amo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town. Do you hear loud moans and banging on your walls? Next time, pay for the better hotel room.
Oh, no more Yankee, my Winky. The donga needs food.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town paranormal radio show. If you're just tuning in, we're listening to an interesting story. Our guest is Cloyce Orand, and he is telling us about his life on the streets growing up and how he ended up being brutally attacked. Now, Cloyce, I don't want to continue beating on this with you and having you have to relive this too much for us, but let's talk a little bit now, getting more into the paranormal shift with your near-death experience that you had with this. Now, I mean, this was a severe trauma that you went through, the things that happened to you. Do you have memory of the near-death experience itself, as so many of us have heard the stories of the bright light and the voices and the angels and things like that? Did you have any kind of experience like that?
Not at all. And, you know, this is what I'm talking about, as far as I pray to God so many times and expected to hear something, you know, that, hey, you know, a lot of people say they draw their strengths from God, and, you know, I had nothing. I had to draw my strengths from myself, and this is where I get a lot of my ideas and perceptions as far as religion. You know, I was really highly religious, and I mean, what is religion? Religion is hope that there's something out there in control, that there's a reason that we're suffering, and there's a reason, you know, that there's supposed to be some grand reward. And you know, at this point, I was really expecting, you know, this is the ultimate of ultimate as a 13-year-old, you know, that I would definitely have earned a position to get to speak to God, and God would actually speak to me. And a lot of people, I hear them, you know, they say, you know, God has spoke to me, God has spoke to me. And at this point, I was pretty much dependent on a situation where I could actually say, hey, God has spoke to me too. I've dealt with a lot of people that heard my story, and they're like, yeah, no, God has spoke to you. You are here. You know, a lot of people don't suffer this, but I've lived on the streets. I've seen it. I've seen it every single day. There's a lot of stories that are very similar to mine where, you know, you got a crackhead, you know, and they watch, you know, a five-year-old kid watches their father shoot himself over drugs, you know, and that doesn't hit the headlines, and it doesn't get this, you know, media attention. You know, that happens millions of times every single day. So I never drawn upon my story as being special or anything like that, because, I mean, it is happening every single day, all the time.
Right.
And there's a lot of people out there just like me. So I'm not asking for any special attention because of it. And, you know, I really hate the fact that to promote my book, that, you know, that's what's actually, you know, a media wants from me. They want to hear this story, and they're saying this is the story, not your book, not your theory, not your ideas, not your perceptions.
No, but this gets you to the story of where your ideas and your theories and perceptions come from. That's what I want to talk about next. Tell me a little bit about how this changed your life, and what is the message that you want to convey?
Well, as far as if you're talking about the traumatic event that happened, it has affected my life in a way that I kind of understand the system. You know, there's government and there's media, and, you know, I have a better understanding. I had it real early in life, as you know, with, you know, being at 13 and dealing with CPS and, you know, how the government stepped in. They only stepped in. I've had countless of times where I was being beaten by my father, and CPS had to step in, and it got to the point where my father gave him a, you know, a piss-ass story as far as an excuse, and, you know, they said, okay, it's all fine. They wrote it off and never returned to it. But it wasn't until the media stepped in and said, look at this traumatic story, that, you know, CPS actually stepped in and separated me from my parents and started putting me through these foster homes and group homes, and actually started taking, because the public actually demanded, you know, what's going on with this kid? You know, what are you doing to help this kid out? And they weren't really doing anything. They were basically pushing me around, moving me around, and letting the public know that, yeah, we're dealing with it, and it's being taken care of. Your tax dollars are being protected. Don't worry. But really, they weren't. I mean, I was. If you read my story and look it up and do your research, I was still homeless, you know, within 2 weeks after the situation happened. They were hunting me down because I was a key witness in a serial situation where, you know, they needed my testimony, and they couldn't find me. And so the system doesn't work. I mean, CPS and child support and, you know, all these things that they say that they're spending our tax dollars on, there's a lot of people getting lost through the system.
Sure. What does this tie in, though, with the Antichrist? What are your views on this and with the book that you've written?
Well, it doesn't. It actually really, in my eyes, it really doesn't tie into the book that I've written. The person that I was when I was 13 is not the person that I am now at 34. Since then, I've opened several businesses. I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I have a construction company that's very successful. The thing is, I've never drawn on that incident for support or power or anything like that. I basically put it behind me. I erased it from my memory and moved on. I've always, as a child, had dreams of being successful and had dreams of where I wanted to be as an adult. I was off the streets. I did my time. I was in jail. The thing that, when I was in jail, it scared me the most is I saw 40 and 50-year-old people. A lot of them are young, but at the same time, most of them are older people, and it really scared me. I looked at it and said, this is the path that I'm on. I'm in and out of jail here and there, selling drugs and doing this and scamming and surviving, and this is not what I want to be when I become of age. I want a family. I want the American dream that we've been promised. They say, the pursuit of happiness, you picture this white picket fence and the American dream, and it's an illusion. A lot of people, the pursuit of happiness is not an illusion. That's all it is. It will be a pursuit of happiness. It doesn't matter how far up the ladder you climb, you'll still be in the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is this thing that, just like religion, it offers you this heaven. You'll never get a taste of it. And the thing is you always question the choices that you make to get to it.
Well, what inspired you to write this book, The Antichrist Version 666?
So let's get on a study. It all started on Easter Day. I was watching a show on the History Channel about the Bible codes, and they were talking about how the Bible, it has these hidden codes, and you have these ELSs, and the only way that you could pull these ELSs out is through a computer, and there's just so much technology with the Bible. And I believe it's the same thing. Mind control is probably the number one technology that government is working on right now, as far as that's what government is. If you look up government in the dictionary, it has two meanings. It's to restrain and control. And I believe that that's, in religion, that's basically what it is. It's a mind police. It's basically saying somebody is out there watching you, and you need to make better choices. You need to be a good husband. You need to be a good father. You need to be a good person in the world. You need to have children, procreate, and do your job as a citizen to make government easier so they don't have to police you as much. Freedom of choice, the government doesn't want you to have that because they want you to understand that, you're here to do a specific mission, and that is to do your job, go home, have children, and don't call upon us. But we're going to take 50% of everything you make the whole time. There's a lot of people that live, and they do their job, they obey the laws, they don't speed, and they never call upon the government. Well, the government's banking on that. Basically, the fact that they're taking 50% of whatever you make, and they want you to believe that you need them, but then you never call upon them. And when you do call upon them, do you ever get results? I've called the police many times and said, somebody's stealing gas out of my trucks, or, somebody's robbed my house, and they're like, here's a card, here's a number, call us, and if you have any more information on it. Basically, they're not going to stake me. They're not going to stake out my house. They're not going to catch this guy. They're not going to do anything for me. I have to do it myself. And once I have some evidence for them that they can do something with, then basically it's cutting them, I have to do their job for them. So what actually pushed me to write this book is once I realized that this Bible was written with some type of technology, it started to make me think a little bit better that, it was. Religion was written with technology. Government has been written with technology. It's basically to control the people. And I started doing research, and I started finding that, there's a lot of things in Scripture. I'd never read the Bible before. Then I was religious. I believed in God, but I'd never really read the Bible. And I started to read the Bible. I started to, find where in this Bible, am I going to be able to pull information that's going to help me with my life? I started to find in the Bible, yeah, there's a lot of situations where they claim that there is a time traveler involved, that, yeah, God is not bound by time. And then I started reading about Satan, you know, and Satan in the Bible, to me, started to sound like he was for the people. He was telling, you know, Eve at the very beginning, you can become a god. You, if you knew the same things as God, you would be God. The only thing that makes God God is the fact that he's immortal, he's not bound by time, and he gets to judge the difference between right and wrong. So the Satan, if you look in the Bible, you know, the things, his message in the Bible, it really, I mean, it's everything that all of us demand all the time. We don't like people to tell us what we're doing is wrong or right. And for whatever reason we're doing, was like, even when I lived on the streets, I was stealing food. I was a thief. But I was feeding my mouth, and I was, you know.
So what you're seeing is more empowerment in what the quote-unquote devil is telling us, that we don't have to be bound by these limitations that are being put on us by this unseen force, and that it's something that we have ability to change and make our lives different our own way.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you, too, just so we have an understanding. Now, where do you stand religious-wise in your life? I understand that, you know, I mean, religion and spirituality are two different things. Are you a Satanist? Do you believe in Satan? Do you believe that, you know, is he the person that you lead your life by? Or are you, you know, non-denominational in any way? You're just in strange quotes here saying, using, you know, being the devil's advocate, just looking at things in a different way.
Yeah, I'm an atheist. I turned in my life and finally found a situation where I said, you know what, I don't believe in God anymore. On Easter Day, when I decided to start doing this research, I started finding all these things with the devil, and, you know, it seemed like I was almost promoting, and a lot of people were like, you know, you're defending the devil. The devil is supposed to be the ultimate of evil. And I started defending him. I was like, no, the only thing he tells you, you know, is to be strong as a person, and that you don't become dependent on God. Am I a Satanist? No, I'm not a Satanist. I don't believe in the devil. You'd have to believe in God to believe in the devil.
Exactly.
I don't believe in the devil. I do believe that Jesus existed. And I look at Jesus as a role model. I believe that he was taken out of context. You know, it's the same thing, like I said, with the media. You know, it isn't until it hits the media attention that they make a story about it, but there's a lot of people that gets lost, you know, through, you know, the little stories that they don't advertise and whatnot. And Jesus just happened to get the attention, and he was a revolutionist. He was tired of watching his people being suppressed by government and by religion and being taxed. So when I look at Jesus, yeah, I'm in a way, I guess you could say I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus' message. I don't believe in Christianity. I don't believe he's our Messiah. I believe he was just a person who lived.
He was a prophet who spoke and just was teaching good lessons, good life lessons?
Not necessarily a prophet, but just a role model. He was definitely against the government, and he was definitely trying to teach his people to stand strong. There's a lot of familiarity between Satan and Jesus that I see. As far as, you know, telling man, you know, be strong and fight for your rights and do what you believe is right. And, you know, the Bible's been edited so many freaking times. So, and it's been edited by the government. If you look at a lot of the churches and the wars that have been fought, the church was inside the castle gates, not outside. They were protected by the government. And when these wars got fought, it was all the pilgrims and all the peasants that were outside the gates that died and suffered the consequences, right. But the church was protected by the government. Now, why is that? Well, because they were within the government. The government, they had, you know, they get tax benefits, you know? Sure. They don't get taxed. I mean, if you look at a lot of conspiracies that happen today, you know, why is this person not, you know, like, if you look at, just about anything, you can see that, you know, they're protected by government because they're controlling the people and the masses.
Well, we have to take our second break here for this last hour, so stick with us. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest Cloyce Orand. We'll be back with more right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. If you bleed from the ears while listening to Leo Sayer Records, would it qualify as a paranormal experience? I thought so. Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Ooh, that hurts.
And welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me in studio this evening, we have Tim Dennis and Ben. She's joining us on her rare night off from her real job. It's good to have you back, Ben.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Let me ask you, Ben. Now, we've been doing the show for...
2 years.
2.5 years, right?
2.25,
yeah,
at least.
2.25. Yeah. And you've heard a lot of different topics on the paranormal. You know, we started off this show for hour one talking to Paul Davis about... you know, demons and demonology and religious and the faith. And we're talking now, of course, with Cloyce Orand and, you know, from an atheistic look at this and how, you know, we're more controlled by government and religions. I mean, what do you find from the things that you've now read and experienced over the last 2.5 years? Is this, how are you coming down on any of these topics? Have you seen a change and a shift in your thoughts?
A little bit, yeah. I'm a bit more open to different opinions and points of view now by being involved with the show and seeing other people.
Reading all the hundreds of books we keep getting poured in at us. Tim, I want to ask you, you know, we're going to go back in talking to Cloyce Orand here mm-hmm. in a minute, and I want to kind of fold this into you. Now, you're the bigger of the skeptics of the three of us, I think, in this field. And how has your perspective of religion changed in the last 2.5 years in regards to the paranormal and the things that we've experienced? And in hearing guests like Paul Davis and, you know, and Cloyce here.
I don't know. I don't know that before we started the show I followed any type of dogma, you know. I was raised Catholic, and I was an altar boy for 3 years. I have a joke about that, but I don't know that I should tell it on the air.
Not a good time.
Yeah, no. Probably not.
The fact of the matter is that it, I don't know that it's changed much since, you know, since even before the show, even 3 or 4 years before the show. But it's interesting to go down the different roads and paths and see what people have to say and what their opinions are about things. I mean, there's only one way we're going to find out what actually happens at the end, but, you know.
Reading the Cliff Notes?
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Good. Well, let's go back in with our guest. Our guest is Cloyce Orand and has written a book called The Antichrist Version 666. We've got a little bit of time here left with you, Cloyce. Why don't you give people that are interested in hearing a little bit about the book, give them kind of a summation of the book and the story behind it. It's a novel that you have out right now. How long ago did you write this book?
I wrote it 2.5 years ago.
Okay, and how long has it been out and available now?
About 2.5 years.
Okay, so you had it printed out right afterwards. All right, tell the people that are tuning in, if they want to pick up this book, give them the summation here. What is the book about?
Okay, the book is about an amazing theory about, it's kind of like the Matrix, that we've all been living in this reality that doesn't really exist, and we've all been lied to a bit. The book talks about... time travel. It's a sci-fi. It talks about the fact that, of course, God himself is not bound by time, so he has to be a time traveler. And in this theory that I have, I found, you know, with the pyramids, Stonehenge, the Mayan culture, okay, based on the Mayan culture, the end of the world was supposed to happen in 2012. Well, if that's the case, and they've been so right about so many things, then the end of the world, if it being 2012, if we refer to biblical scripture 7 years before the end of the world, an antichrist is supposed to appear, which would be 2005. The beast is supposed to have been risen. Well, if you look at my book and the time that it came out, it is exactly the same time that the Mayans or that biblical culture predicted that the beast would rise 7 years before the end of the world, if the Mayan are correct. You can get my book on the Antichrist version 666, Barnes and Noble's, Amazon, and whatnot. But it's an amazing theory that's been hidden from us as far as time travel. This Antichrist travels back in time and actually makes all our history happen in the same events that it is supposed to happen. If time travel is ever invented in the future, say it's invented a thousand years in the future, then there has to be signs of it in the past. And there's a lot of anomalies in the past with the pyramids and Stonehenge, and how did these cultures dramatically evolve so quickly? Well, with time travel, a lot of archaeologists, when they go back and do their research, they never have time travel evolved. What if somebody from the future came back? When they're digging through the caves of the cavemen and say, we've got these elaborate pictures and drawings and whatnot. What do these mean? Well, these cavemen were, making a little time capsule for the future. Well, back then they weren't thinking about the future and technology and whatnot. I mean, is it possible that somebody from the future came back and drew these on the cave walls and taught them how to hunt for food and astronomy and, culture and language? And I mean, could it have been a situation like that? Very possible. My thing is, I took a lot of facts as far as the Mayan archaeology, science, and I looked at it from a different perception, that somebody from the Bible could have possibly been a time traveler. And I found, when I started digging, I started finding that the Mayan culture and the Egyptian culture, a lot of them worshipped the planet Venus, which drew me to the planet Venus. Well, what is so special about the planet Venus? And not only that, but, I mean, we've only learned about the planet Venus over the last 100 years, where these guys are, we're talking tens of thousands of years ago, knew about the planet Venus before a telescope was even invented. In my theory, it creates this planetary evolution, that Earth itself is evolving in time, and that Venus is Earth in the past and Mars is Earth in the future, and that Earth is existing in a lot of different spectrums. If you look at Earth a billion years in the past, it's not going to look exactly the same as it does. It's going to look like a completely different planet. If you look at Earth a billion years in the future, it's going to look like a totally different planet. Right. Well, if you look at the signs of Venus, Venus had oceans of plasma, and it was mostly carbon. Well, if you look at, what scientists say today that Earth was a billion years in the past, it explains exactly that. Earth was mostly carbon, had no water, didn't have a moon. And if you look at Mars in the future, it has an electromagnetic field exactly like Earth. It had water at one time. It had possibly life at one time. And even in David Flynn's book, it had pyramids on it. And the pyramids are the key. The pyramids is what told the Antichrist, Mars is Earth in the future, because they were built in the same formation as the ones in Egypt.
Right.
So, could those pyramids that we're seeing on Mars be the pyramids that we're seeing here on Earth? Why did they build these pyramids? I don't completely believe that they were built just as a coffin for this major king. I mean, it took hundreds of years and a lot of manpower, and, they were talking about the afterlife and the psycho life, and it just doesn't make sense, to me. I'm not believing 100% that what we believe is actual fact. But if my theory, you look at the next planet, the gas planets. You've got Jupiter, you've got Saturn, you've got Uranus and Neptune. If you look at those four planets, it's a very clear perception of 1, 2, 3, 4. Jupiter is 98% hydrogen. To me, what I've learned about hydrogen, it's explosive. It's a bomb. If you look at Saturn, what caused the rings of Saturn? A major planetary explosion. So if Jupiter explode, what's it going to look like? Okay, you look at the next planet in the line, Saturn, it showed a major planetary explosion. Now these rings are, you know, scientists fight over it every single day. Is it dissolving into the planet or is it going away from the planet? It's irrelevant to me because you look at the next planet, which is Uranus. If you say Saturn has 15 rings, Uranus only has 5. You look at the next planet, Neptune, it only has 1. So it's still, either way, whether they're going into the planet or away from the planet, it shows a clear subception that the rings are dissolving or they're moving away. Either way, they're dissolving. So you have less and less and less. So it's A, B, C, D. Very simple. If you look at the rocky planets, you know, you got Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, it's the same story. It shows a very easy evolution of the planets. And the thing is, it's just like the Hubble telescope. It can see the very edge of the universe when the universe was first born. And we can see it today through a telescope. So to look through space is to look through time. And I believe it was Dr. Cuckoo that, you know, explained that. You know, you're not just looking through space, you're looking through space-time. Sure. So we have to ask the question, you know, very logically, say, where is the birth of Earth during this time? And it could be very obviously right in front of us the whole time. And the thing is it just depends on your perception. And a lot of people listen to this theory and they say, you're crazy. Well, a lot of people listen to Einstein's theories and thought he was crazy. You know, the theory of gravity, they thought he was crazy. He was considered a heretic, you know. They wanted to hang him. Well, I'm in the same boat right now as far as I'm trying to change the perception of modern-day media and say, you know, just at least look at it as a possibility, a perception that maybe there's something we're missing here. And, of course, we are. We all know that something has to dramatically change. And the thing is, I get enlightened every single day by my 4-year-old son to his perception versus mine. I showed him a picture of a Picasso where it has a woman crouching, and it's a naked woman. And he looked at me and he said, Dad, why do you have a picture of Jiminy Cricket on the wall? I'm like, Jiminy Cricket, that's a naked woman. You know, he's never known sexuality. He's never known nakedness. And I looked at it, and I was like, I erased what I know about naked women and, you know, sexuality, and looked at it, I was like, holy crap, it really is. It's a cartoon figure.
Sure.
You know, and he taught me something. He enlightened me to another truth that's been in front of me the entire time. And how do we know that Picasso didn't draw that specifically for that intention? Maybe he's a better artist than what he, you know, was.
Right, giving people a different perspective of the same view and giving everybody that looks at it a different way to experience something like your book.
Exactly.
Well, so, I appreciate it. We're running out of time here. I want to thank you very much. And again, the name of the book is The Antichrist Version 666. People can go to your website, antichristversion666.com, and order the autographed copy of the book from you there. I wish you continued luck and healing for you and your soul and you know, I hope that you found peace for yourself, too, in your life and continue to be successful in everything you do.
Hey, and Dave, you know, thank you for having me on the show, and I hope to be on another show because, like I said, I didn't quite get everything out. So,
sure.
You know, I think there's a lot more information out there that I could add.
Great. Well, thank you, and hopefully that'll drive people to take a look at your book, and we can continue that way. Thank you very much for joining us, Cloyce Oran. And again, for any of you interested, you can go to the Antichrist Version 666 is the name of the book. Hey, I want to make a quick mention. We've put up a website that does Darkness Radio Cares for healing and prayer, and you know, it's done a really lot of good for a lot of people, getting immediate results. A friend of ours, Cheryl, who had a severe asthma attack and nearly died, we all came together and had hundreds and thousands of prayers and healing requests go out, and she is doing so well, she's not even on her inhaler anymore. So check out our website at myspace.com/darknessradiocares. Add in your prayer request. Right now we do have a prayer request for our good friend Marty Perry. from spiritart.com. Michael and Marty Perry were out at our Stanley event last week. Marty has developed pneumonia. She's very ill. She needs your prayers, your love, your energy, your light. So please send that to Marty Perry in California. And also pray for her husband, Michael, to help him. He's giving around-the-clock care, and he needs the strength. So please be with them. Join us again next week. We'll be back with more Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thank you for joining us. And remember to check out our website, darknessevents.com, for upcoming new paranormal retreats.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill, pets shed, and accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change, and certain restrictions may apply.